perceiving this, surely shall come to me. Know thou that nature and spirit both have no beginning, knows that qualities and changes of them are by nature wrought, that nature puts to work the acting frame, but spirit doth inform it, and so cause feeling of pain and pleasure, spirit linked to molded matter, entereth into bond with qualities by nature framed, and thus married to matter, and breeds the birth again. In good or evil yonis, yet in this, yea, in its bodily prison, spirit pure, spirit supreme, surveying, governing, guarding, possessing, Lord and Master still, Purusha, ultimate one soul with me. Whoso knows himself and knows his soul, Purusha, working through the qualities with nature's modes, the light hath come for him. This is written in beautiful poetic language, but sometimes makes it difficult to understand. But what Krishna is saying here is that he resides in everything, and when he speaks of himself, he speaks as the pure spirit that is both in creation and beyond creation, and that he is in the heart of all. But to those who are wise, he manifests himself as that wisdom, and he takes that individual and makes him as himself, the Purusha, which is the pure light of God. It is a tremendous promise from God given to us. And reading from the Gospel of Ramakrishna, find my place here. Therefore, I give the illustration of the gong's sound, tom, T-O-M, but O is A-U, tom. I have clearly perceived all these things. It has been revealed to me that there exists an ocean of consciousness without limit. From it come all things of the relative plane, and in it they merge again. Millions of Brahmins rise from that ocean and merge into it again. All this has been revealed to me. I don't know much about what your books say. And one who's listening, Mahima. Those to whom such things were revealed did not write the scriptures. They were wrapped in their own experiences. When would they write? One needs a somewhat calculating mind to write. Others learnt these things from the seers and wrote the books. Ramakrishna. Worldly people ask, why does one not get rid of attachment to women and gold? That attachment disappears after the realization of God. If a man once tastes the bliss of Brahman, then his mind no longer runs after the enjoyment of sense pleasures or wealth, or name and fame. If the moth once sees the light, it no longer goes into the darkness. Some friends said to Ravana, Ravana is the devil, so to speak, in the Ramayana, the story of Rama, and he is in battle with Rama. You have been assuming different forms for Sita. Why don't you go to her in the form of Ram? Ravana replied, when I contemplate Ram, even the position of Brahma appears insignificant to me, not to speak of the company of another man's wife. In other words, if he were to assume the form of Ram, he wouldn't care for anything of the world and the senses that drives him to want to conquer Sita, Rama's wife. How could I take the form of Ram for such a purpose? All worship and spiritual discipline are directed to one end alone, namely to get rid of worldly attachment. The more you meditate on God, the less you will be attached to the trifling things of the world. This is very important. The more you meditate on God, the less you will be attached to the trifling things of the world. The more you love the lotus feet of God, the less you will crave the things of the world or pay heed to the creature comforts. You will look on another man's wife as your mother and regard your own wife as your companion in spiritual life. You will get rid of your bestial desires and acquire godly qualities. You will be totally unattached to the world. Though you may still have to live in the world, you will live as a jiva mukta, that is, one who is freed even while they are living. The disciples of Sri Chaitanya lived as householders in a spirit of detachment. You may quote thousands of arguments from Vedanta philosophy to a true lover of God and try to explain the world as a dream, but you cannot shake his devotion to God. In spite of all your efforts, he will come back to his devotion. A man born with an element of Shiva becomes a jnani. His mind is always inclined to the feeling that the world is unreal and Brahman alone is real. But when a man is born with an element of Vishnu, he develops ecstatic love of God. That love can never be destroyed. It may wane a little now and then when he indulges in philosophical reasoning, but it ultimately returns to him increased 1,000-fold. After the devotees had left, the master, Mahim Acharan, brought Hazra to the room. M was present. Mahima said to Sri Ramakrishna, "Sir, I have a complaint against you. Why have you asked Hazra to go home? He has no desire to return to his family." Ramakrishna, "His mother has told Ramlal how much she is suffering on account of his being away from home. So I have asked Hazra to go home at least 3 or 4 days and see her. Can anyone succeed in spiritual discipline if it causes suffering to his mother?" Excuse me. "While visiting Vrindavan, I had almost made up my mind to live there when I remembered my mother. I said to myself, my mother will weep if I stay away from her. So I returned here with Mater Babu. Besides, why should a jnani like Hazra be afraid of going back to the world?" Mahama, with a smile, "Sir, that would be pertinent question if Hazra were a jnani." Master, smiling, "Oh, Hazra has attained everything. He has just a little attachment to this world because of his children and a small debt. As people say, my aunt is now in perfect health, only she is slightly ill." Mahama, "Sir, where, sir, is Hazra's knowledge?" Master, smiling, "Oh, you don't know? Everybody says Hazra is quite a man. Everybody knows that he lives in Dakshineshwar Temple. People talk of nothing but Hazra. Who would bother to mention my name?" Everyone laughed. Hazra, "You, sir, are incomparable. You have no peer in the world. Therefore, nobody understands you." Master, "There you are. To be sure, no one can have dealings with the incomparable. So why should people mention me at all?" Mahama, "What does he know, sir? He will do your bidding." Master, "That is not so. You had better ask him about it. He said to me, you and I are on even terms." Mahama, "He argues a great deal." Master, "Now and then he teaches me a lesson." Everyone laughed. "Sometimes I scold him when he argues too much. Later, when I am lying in bed inside the mosquito curtain, I feel unhappy at the idea of having offended him. So I leave the bed and go to Hazra and salute him. Then I feel peace of mind." To Hazra, why do you address the pure Atman as Ishvara? The pure Atman is inactive and is the witness of the three states. When I think of the acts of creation, preservation, and destruction, then I call the pure Atman Ishvara, pure light. What is the pure Atman like? It is like a magnet lying at a great distance from a needle. The needle moves, but the magnet lies motionless, inactive. The pertinent point of all of these teachings, both from the Gita and from Ramakrishna, is that God resides in everything and everyone. But to the unawakened, to the one who has not attained jnana, then it seems invisible. And for one who has not been awakened at all, it can feel all a fairy tale, a dream, something that is inconsequential. Tell an ordinary individual, the kingdom of heaven is within you. They may nod in agreement if they've been raised in a Christian church, because they've heard the words before. But to them, it is not something that is alive. It is not something that is absolutely pertinent to their lives. They will then think, what is on television later on today? What is it that I have to do to earn a living? What do other people think of me? What will I be purchasing next? And so on. The mind is filled up with all of these ideas and things and leaves no room at all for God. To leave room for God, you must become quiet. You must become still within yourself. But when you try to still the mind, all these things of the world begin to crowd in on you, and it feels like it is so difficult and perhaps impossible for you to be able to set aside the things of this world just even a little while so that you may meditate purely upon God. Both Krishna and Lari Mahashai said that even a little bit of this practice will alleviate you of all sorrow. And yet, who has that experience? We seem to set aside some time for meditation, but we return to this world even as we came into our meditation, unchanged. There must be an awakening, a deep awakening of a spiritual consciousness within us. That magnet must attract the needle, which is our mind, towards the all-pervading presence of God. We must wake up to the fact that there is something so immense, so enormous inside of us, that it puts everything of the world, everything that we normally consider so important, as to be very little importance at all. This is something that we must awaken to, only for most of us, it is a gradual awakening. Somehow in my early life, God made me dissatisfied with the things of this world. I could find no real enjoyment in them. I would try this or that or the other thing, and yet there was such a deep pain inside of me. And at the time, I considered it a great curse. Why can't I be happy even as other people seem to be happy? But I could not. And I couldn't enter into this world. I had no inspiration to do so. And yet, I had no easy alternative. There is nothing that was apparent to me about this world that I wanted to seek after, or any other world for that matter. Gradually, I became awakened that there was something bigger, something deeper, something more profound that was inside of me. It all began on a dark night when I was in such emotional pain. And being agnostic at the time, I spoke to God and I said, Lord, if I have never needed you before, if you exist, I need you now. And I'm in such pain, I feel like that I'm breaking apart. And suddenly there was a lifting of all of that pain. It felt like 1,000 pounds of weight were lifted off of me, where before I was being crushed. And I felt free from all this tremendous pain. My rational mind tried to rationalize away the experience, but a deeper part of me knew that something profound had just happened. I couldn't just reason it away that I had been wishing for something to happen, so it did. And it set me off onto a journey, a grand journey in which I wanted to know what that intelligence, what that power, what that pure feeling was that I felt in that moment. And I didn't have it for a long time. But I would get little glimpses of it here and there, a feeling of peace, a feeling of upliftment. And it wasn't until I read a book that directed me towards having a guru, because before that time I was reading mostly and hoping to find the answers in that way or through my own inner explorations. And yet I knew that I was missing out on something essential, something key. And when I read a book about a man meeting a guru, I thought, that's it. I need to meet somebody who knows the way, who's been this way already, and can tell me how to get there. And so that set me on the path. And it wasn't until that fateful night that on Wednesday that I met my own guru that I really came to awaken to this inner path, because it was through her talk. It was through the spiritual power which poured through her as she spoke that lifted me up, that purified me, that made me feel in touch with higher realms. And as I listened to her, I felt renewed. It wasn't every doubt, every question was put aside, but that I knew that I was touching the hem of spirit, something, a fabric of being so greatly superior to anything that I had had before. And so I wanted to find out what that was about, how to get that, how to get more of it. And so I decided to follow her only. And yet the struggles continued, and it was far from the case that I was living in bliss from that moment onward. It was a great struggle, and it was a great number of years of being lifted up and then being dashed down to the rocks of delusion once again. And up and down I would go, and then the Kundalini one day was awakened in me through the power of Guru and God. And so that power began to take me over, and because Mother had been teaching me about it, I understood a little bit about it. And I knew that I needed to keep my mind upon higher things, upon the Ajna, upon higher thought. But it didn't always go smoothly or easily, and sometimes my mind slipped, and when it did, it drew my attention down into the lower senses. And then I would strive to go up again. And back and forth it went. I wish I could say that I just simply zoomed to the straight top of the mountain, even as Papa, even as Master or Mother. But it wasn't the case with me. My mind was uneven because old desire nature would kick in. And so it greatly prolonged the path that I was on. But gradually, there was a purification, and I could exist for longer and longer periods until I was able to live in that state of grace most all the time. And yet there was a period of separation, and I went into the nothingness of God. And in the nothingness, I just felt completely neutral. Now, some people imagine being in God realization. They hear the words dispassionate. They hear the words that this world seems as a dream. But in this state, it was absolutely a land of neutrality. And there is nothing in it. There is no life at all. And this is not the state of God realization. This is the nothingness of God that you must traverse through. And when you go through it, you are completely stripped of everything, every thought, every desire, everything that you have ever had. You are completely neutral to it all. This is the emptying out of the cup, completely out. And yet this was in the second stage of the mystical crucifixion, so this wasn't the end of it either. Then you have to go through every thought, and you realize that every thought has creative power to it. And it's quite humbling, really, when you realize that every thought that you have has a consequence, has an effect. And we have a right to our own personal thoughts and where those thoughts go. And yet, there is a definite law of cause and effect. For every thought, there is a reaction that comes back to you. So you realize that there are no times that you are free to let your mind go in just whatever direction it will. Now, all of this may very well be impossible if the magnet were not drawing the needle of your mind constantly to it. That is grace within you. And so you strive. You do everything that you can, that you know to do, and sometimes you'll go down into the valleys. And then you have to climb out of that dark valley, and you have to climb into the heights again. And you just get to the peak of there, and then you are drawn into another valley. This is the path of purification. But the more purely, the more evenly, you can keep your mind on God at all times, the less likely you'll be drawn down into a valley. And as a result of that, you climb and climb and climb. And what happens is one day you enter in and what Mother called going over the top. And you enter into that pure state of consciousness and you don't come down from it. And what can you expect then? You expect that inside you will always be in communion with that pure, all-powerful, all-beautiful, all-absorbing spiritual consciousness. This is the Purusha. This is the pure light of God within you. And your Atman, or your soul, is always illumined with this light of God within you. You feel that purity. You feel that you are never separated from that. You are never alone. And you have wisdom flowing to you. Sometimes it is talked about that you have all wisdom, but that's not quite it. Indeed, you have access to all wisdom. But as long as you maintain a human form, that wisdom flows to you as God directs it. And sometimes he takes you into states of ignorance because it is his play. You are not all-knowing in that sense, not at all. And yet you have access to the all-knowing spirit within you, but sometimes God plays the fool inside of you because he is doing it for certain purposes. I remember there was times when I was with Mother in large crowds, and I would be thinking of her, of course, and I would be thinking, Mother, if you can read my thoughts, then turn your head towards me. You know, I wanted to test her in that way and see whether she knew my thoughts or not. And if she didn't turn, I just was perplexed at that. And somehow I felt that she did know my thoughts, but she wasn't turning. And I myself have had that experience. I've been in different groups and people have wanted me to do different things and they were testing me. And I could feel God inside of me not responding because that's a lower plane of powers. One time somebody said, Papa, you know all of our thoughts. And he says, don't say it so. I would have to lower my consciousness in order to know all your thoughts. That's a psychic realm. Rather, he knew God's thoughts on a moment-to-moment basis. And so sometimes the God-man may know everything in the sense of God gives him all of that. And other times he knows nothing. In truth, I feel that I am absolute emptiness. There is nothing inside of me. Sometimes Carla is driving me to a place where I will be giving a talk, and I will think, I have absolutely nothing inside of me. I have nothing to say. I have not an idea of what's going to come forward. And yet, when I arrive and the sincerity of devotees who are gathered draws from me some wisdom from God, and I hear God speaking through me, I feel his thoughts flowing through me. They are not my own thoughts, and yet they are deeply connected with my own. It's a strange thing. It's hard to describe, because God is both your own mind, your own heart, your own experience, and yet he is beyond your mind, your heart, your experience. He is both and. It's a hard thing for the mind to grasp because we tend to think, well, if I were God realized, I wouldn't have these human feelings. I wouldn't have these problems that seem to plague me at different times. And yet, is it not true that God is already dwelling within you? You could not draw a breath. You could not have your life at all, in any, even for a nanosecond, without God dwelling within you. Therefore, God is already within you. What is different is that you are not conscious always of that presence of God that is moving in you, speaking through you, thinking through you. And so our sadhana is practicing God remembrance. And through that God remembrance, we help to purify this mind. We constantly think to yourself, this is God thinking through me. This is God feeling through me. This is God moving through me. And as you connect your mind to God's mind, you feel that, maybe not in the fullness that you would like to, but you feel an essence of it. You feel that as you are walking, as you are moving, as you are thinking, as you are speaking, that is God who is moving, thinking, and speaking through you. And at first it can be not fully the full conscious experience of it, but you get a flavor of it, you get a feeling for it. And it is that essence, it is that little bit of feeling that helps to purify you. So that as you continually practice that, that eventually the fullness of that experience comes on you. Now you feel that there is no separation from you and God, that God is dwelling inside of you, that God is flowing to you as life energy that sustains you, and that when it comes time, He will withdraw from you and He will destroy this life. And this body will fall down completely inert, no life whatsoever in it. And yet, your life continues seamlessly. It does not even miss a beat. And by and large, you feel so freed. Now, if you have not accomplished in this lifetime what you came to do, then you will feel the pain of that. And if you had come in to realize more of God, and you felt that you were distracted in this lifetime, you didn't get all that you came to get, then you will feel a keen disappointment. But that keen disappointment will build that inner resolve inside of you that you never want to waste another lifetime in getting distracted from God remembrance. And as a result of that, when you come into the next lifetime, you will have that inner will, that inner desire, more firmly fixed in your mind. The needle of your mind will constantly draw itself back to God. Now, at the south end of that pole is the things of this world. And we do live in a world. We must deal with this world. And in the beginning, we can't do it with the full consciousness of God because we have not earned that. And yet, through our constant practice, through our constant God remembrance, we will feel greater and greater amounts of God entering and seeping into our ordinary life. Master said that after Sri Yukteswar had granted him that state of samadhi, and then he was able to enter into it, he felt that God was directing him in all matters in his life, and he was surprised that even in inconsequential small matters, God weighed in and said, not this, but that. And so it might be what you eat for breakfast in the morning. It might be who you decide to see that day or what you decide to say. And it may not be of great moment other than the fact that it is God expressing Himself through you. So the key, the essence, is this constant God remembrance, bringing the needle of your mind back to God. Now, there are these two great paths, the jnani as well as the bhakti. Papa, Master, Mother, they all recommended the path of the bhakti. And what does that mean? It means to get a feeling for God, an attraction for God. The jnani uses his mind and says, God is not this and God is not that. It's a very, you might say, dry path. It's a very exacting path. And as you strip away everything that is not of God, gradually what is revealed is God. For the bhakti, It is an awakening to what God is to you right now. That we are told that God is all bliss, all love, all light, all joy. We begin to think of those attributes. We begin to think of God. Perhaps we are especially drawn to a particular form of God. I've always loved the forms of Krishna and of Jesus, and of various other saints as well. And so your mind may take on an attraction to a particular form, but that was not usually the case with me. I was focused upon the quality of God, without any particular form, that God was all bliss, God was the truth, God was light, God was love. These were the qualities that I focused my mind on, and that I wanted more of those, and that it was those very qualities that I would keep my mind on and would draw me up and closer to God, and that I would feel God more greatly. That when I was around my guru, I felt those qualities awaken inside of me. And so I wanted to be around her as much as I could. And yet, sometimes, because the power of God in her was so great, that I would also have a headache, that I would be overheated, that it would be difficult in many ways. But I didn't care. You set aside the little preferences for things in life. You learn that you can enjoy things in life. Mother enjoyed everything about this life that she did, that she wanted to enculturate in us, the beauty of life, the love of good food, everything. She didn't shy away from it at all. The difference is that those are not all-consuming desires. Those are not the most important things. And that if you lose touch with God because of something operating in desire nature, then God comes first. And you really struggle to set those things aside so that it is God first. So you might admire things that are of great beauty in life, whether it is a song, whether it is a picture, whether it is a form of a person or a sunset. Whether it is a good meal, it can all be enjoyed. In fact, Krishna says that for a yogi, enjoyment through the senses is done so in balance. So we do not need to imagine that we need to throw ashes on our food or make it taste terrible. Jesus, too, was a bhakti, and he enjoyed festivities. He enjoyed good food. He enjoyed the company of good people. And yet for him, God came first, middle, and last. Now what you come to realize eventually is that the enjoyment of these things through the senses comes through the power of God. And so these things don't distract you from God, rather they remind you of God. And that everything reminds you of God. God being the love, joy, peace, bliss, light of the eternal being within you. What is there not to like about this? You go to God in total balance, you see. You go about taking care of things that need to be taken care of in this world. But first and foremost is God remembrance. And it is through that that the mind is purified, and then God remembrance comes without any effort, because God is the all-pervading presence always within you. This is the truth, and this truth will set you free. So let us, from this moment forward, always strive to keep the needle of the mind pointed towards the magnet of God. Let us never let go of that. And when we do that, we will travel to God in the most perfect manner, the quickest manner, the most sure manner. And that you don't have to reject this world, but rather you just simply keep your mind on God through it all until you see that this world itself is made up of nothing but God stuff. How could it be any wise other? And those things that in the past drew your mind away, drew the needle of your mind away, no longer have any draw for you. Because God is such an all-consuming attraction, you want nothing else than that. So let us have a closing prayer.
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. I bow to you. And special blessings for Rick and Judy's Dharmashala on Wheels in opening their home to us today. This beautiful desert. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.